There's been one item up to today, actually, and I've only just picked up the news of today, which is horrific, if anyone's heard of the bombings in Sri Lankan churches this morning. But up till then, there's only been one item dominating the news this week, and that is, of course, the fire at Notre Dame. It's a story which has been full of emotion, a roller coaster of emotion. A story which has brought France to a standstill, a story which has touched the world. And in that story, you know, so much of the Easter story, I think, has shone through. It's as though on the pictures on our TVs and on social media, much of the story of Easter was proclaimed to the world a few days early this year, as we watched the events in Paris. On Monday morning, I was at our own cathedral here in Worcester, along with all the other priests and bishops of our diocese, reconfirming our commitment to ministry and receiving communion together. And then in the evening, I sat and watched as another cathedral, the cathedral at the very heart of France, burnt. It was an eerie scene on Monday night, wasn't it? As the crowds gathered around Notre Dame, shocked, in disbelief, in devastation, with many in tears at what they were witnessing. President Macron initially was left speechless. No words could express the scene as the flames took hold at the heart of the nation. The building which many French people on Monday said, this is the defining building. This building defines our very identity. And then there was that moment, wasn't there? That moment when the spire finally succumbed to the heat and the flames and broke and snapped in two and fell. It was as if the crowds were watching the building die at that moment. And hope was draining away, and despair and disorientation overtook the faces of the onlooking crowd. And as I watched those TV pictures, I couldn't help but see the parallels between them and those scenes that first Good Friday. When the crowds gathered there on Golgotha, around the crosses there on the hill outside of Jerusalem, to see life gradually ebb away and finally be snuffed out from the one that they had their hopes on. The one they called the Messiah. The one who for 3 years had defined their very identity. The one who they had watched do miracles, heal the sick, give sight to the blind, calm the storm. But then as darkness covered the land that afternoon, those hopes, their future seemed to have died with them. And in the story we've just watched, those two followers of Jesus on the road, Cleopas and the unnamed one, were walking back to Emmaus. Emmaus, a village just 7 miles outside of Jerusalem where all these events had taken place. And as they walked, they were trying to process their emotions together. They were trying to make sense of the tragedy that they had just witnessed. But they were full of grief, full of despair, full of confusion as to all these reports of the tomb being empty. For their world had just fallen apart. They were left directionless, rudderless, and in utter confusion. And so often we too can hit those times in our own lives, can't we? Where we face the mess, the pain, the hopelessness, the despair, the sudden bereavement, the marriage breakup, the unexpected medical diagnosis, the redundancy, the family crisis, the cloud of depression. Those times when we're left in a state of confusion, desperate and not knowing where to turn. Where our hopes have been shattered, where our future just seems black and bleak, and where we can be left to wonder where God is in it all, if in fact he's there at all. And isn't that what those Sri Lankan Christians must be feeling this very morning as their Easter services in seven churches have been disrupted and set on fire and many, many have died? Where is God in it all? But you know, the great news is that this Easter story, and indeed the story of Notre Dame, and I pray the story of those Sri Lankan churches too, doesn't end in this place. For there is great hope. There is a light in the darkness. Easter doesn't end on Good Friday. There's more of the story to be told, the best bit of the story, the story of Easter Sunday. You know, the most powerful picture of all that has been shared this week is, I think, this one. It's an amazing picture of inside the cathedral on Tuesday morning, of the devastation all around, of all those burnt rafters that have come down, crashing down. And yet in that mess, in that chaos, in the hopelessness, one thing stands tall, stands untouched, stands stronger than ever, giving life and hope. It's the cross. The cross of Jesus. The cross demonstrating to the world that the powerful presence of Jesus can never be extinguished. Even in the darkest moments, it can never be destroyed. It proclaims that the powerful presence of Jesus enters into our mess, our chaos. That he, Jesus, stands right in the heart of the mess and brings hope and the start of restoration and redemption. You see, the great news of the cross, as I was sharing on Monday with a couple of people up at All Saints who have just started coming to our churches, who are just new to faith, and I was sharing with them, the great news is that we don't have to clean up our lives before we and get ourselves sorted before we can come to the cross, before we can come back to God. For the Bible says this. It says, but God demonstrates his own love for us. That while we were still sinners, my words, while we were still in a mess, that Christ died for us. You see, Jesus, that the cross comes to us, comes to this world in our mess. Jesus comes to us and dies for us so that the mess of our lives might be cleaned up and transformed and our relationship with God restored again. Jesus came to bring forgiveness and life in all its fullness and to lead us back to God. And that is what happens that first Easter Sunday. The presence of Jesus joined these two friends on the road to Emmaus. He joined them in their pain and their confusion, in their mess and in their hopelessness. They didn't recognize him at all on the road, but he was there with them, walking alongside them, speaking to them of that hope, reminding them that this was God's plan all along, that Christ had to suffer to bring us forgiveness, that Christ had to suffer and die because of our sin, that he had to take our place, that our mess, our mistakes were all absorbed on the cross so that we could be forgiven, released from the shame and the guilt of our past. So that we could be friends with God again. That was why when it all seemed lost and broken and hopeless, it was still called Good Friday. Because on Good Friday, the cross stood tall. The cross stood tall in the mess of the world. And the words of Jesus, it is finished, declared that evil and suffering were defeated, that the barrier between people and God had been torn down once and for all, and that the restoration of the whole world was just beginning. Their friends, those friends, had a choice on the road that day. They had the choice to disbelieve and stay in that hopeless place of despair and sadness and let the stranger walk on by. Or they had the choice to open their homes and their hearts to receive him. And get this, even though they didn't understand it, even though it still didn't make sense to them, even though they still didn't know who he was, and what did they choose? They chose to take a risk, to say, come in. They chose to say yes to the risen Jesus and allow him to dwell with them and eat with them and reveal to them just who he was and how much he loved them. And when he finally broke the bread, as he had done at the Last Supper just 4 days previously, we're told their eyes were opened and they understood and believed and they recognized that the man beside them, the man who had been walking with them, was the risen Jesus. And as their eyes were opened, their hearts were transformed. Their grief turned to joy. Their despair turned to hope. Their bleak future suddenly had purpose and meaning again. And when, what did they do? They turned around. They turned around and ran back to Jerusalem to declare to the rest of their friends, it's true. He is risen. And you know, that, for me, it is such a picture of how we become a Christian. We don't have to get our lives sorted first. It's not like other religions where we have to work our way and earn our way back to God. You see, the news is that Jesus is already here, walking with us. He is here, ready beside each one of us, wanting to be invited into the joys, into the pain, into the mess, into the ordinary things of our lives. And the first thing we need to do is simply to invite him in to our messy lives. To say, come in. To open that door to him. Even though we may have many questions still and still not be sure who he is yet, we invite him in and allow him to meet us and transform us. You know, one of the greatest joys, the greatest joy of doing my job is that I get to see just how much Jesus transforms people. And just in these last few weeks, it's been amazing just to see several people who have come and connected up with us and come to church for the first time, who have had their eyes opened and their hearts opened to see who Jesus is. And they've been transformed. Their despair has turned to hope. Their sadness has turned to joy. And they say, or several of them, they say, I have encountered a love which I've never known before. Those words have been told to me just last Monday as I chatted to two of those people up at All Saints. And I hope before too long you guys are going to hear some of those stories. And it's been such a joy to me to journey with these people, as I know some of you have too. And to see the difference and the transforming presence of the risen Jesus in people's lives. For without doubt, Jesus still transforms lives today. He turns despair to hope and sadness and pain to joy and peace. And then after saying, come in, and inviting Jesus to begin to transform us, the next step is to do what those friends did that day. And turn around. See, the Bible gives this a word. It calls it repentance, which means turning around 180 degrees. You see, where we turn 180 degrees, instead of walking away our own way, away from God, we turn around and we decide, actually, I'm going to go a different path. I'm going to walk to God and I'm going to follow his way and I'm going to be led by him. That's what those guys did that day. They turned around. They went back to God. And they went back to tell their friends, he's alive. We've been transformed. Come in. Be transformed. Turn around. That's what it means. That's all we need to do to encounter Jesus. You know, that first Easter day was the defining point in all of history. That day proclaimed that even in the darkest days, there is always hope. That even the biggest mess and disaster is not the end with God. For on that first Easter day, God began his rebuilding project. He began his cleaning up project for the whole of the world. President Macron has set a challenge, hasn't he? To rebuild, to resurrect Notre Dame in 5 years by the time of the 2024 Paris Olympics. And he's vowed that when finished, Notre Dame will be, in his words, even more beautiful than before. And you know, that too is the amazing news of the Easter story and of resurrection. Not only is Jesus alive now and is here to walk with each one of us, but that he is embarking on a restoration project for us and for our messed up world, which will result in something far more beautiful than ever before. The Bible ends with this amazing picture. You can read it for yourselves in Revelation chapter 21, the second but last chapter of the Bible. And in that chapter, it talks of the new heaven and the new earth, which is the final destination and eternal home for all who put their trust in Jesus. And in that place, we're told that there'll be no more death or no more crying or no more mourning or no more pain, for everything will have been made new. And God will once again live with his people in perfect peace and in perfect rest for all of eternity. That's what resurrection points to. That is the amazing hope of Easter, even if we are facing the very worst of life now. That God has not given up. That God is on the case. That death is not the end. But that one day and for all of eternity thereafter, everything will be perfectly restored, more beautiful than ever before. And that we are all invited to be there if we so choose and be part of it. But that's not the only invitation. We're not just invited to the final restoration party, as it were. But we're invited to join with God in his restoration project now. We're invited to join him now in this world, here in Malvern in 2019. Restoring the mess, transforming lives, transforming communities, bringing something of that new heaven and earth to this earth now. You know, we're invited to continue with God the work that the cross began. And that's why I love being here at St. Andrew's and All Saints, because actually God has given us so many opportunities to come and be part of his restoration project. Just over the last week, seeing Christians Against Poverty, seeing CAP be set up and meet its first few clients who are going to give those people a chance to get out of debt, to have their lives turned around, to hear of the bereavement cafe that we're about to start in a few weeks' time, to meet with those who are in the pits of despair and bereavement and grief. The work that goes on in the Octagon to reach that community, the work that we're doing in schools, God has given this stuff to us and said, come and join in with my restoration plan. And the amazing thing is that he invites each and every one of us to join in. Everyone is invited to play. Everyone has the chance to be part of it. That is the transforming and amazing hope of Easter. I'd love us to be still and just to be quiet and quieten our hearts. And just to ask yourself, where do you see yourself in this story? Which bit of the story do you most relate to right now in this place? You know, I think there are some people here who I sense don't know God walking alongside them. But he's there. And today he's inviting you to let him in, to open the door to him. Particularly think maybe some of the young people here, this is for you, who've never let Jesus in. And the great thing is that actually Jesus wants to come into the mess of our lives. You don't have to get yourself cleaned up. He's just coming into the mess and he will begin his transformation work in you if you just open the door and let him in. And that begins by simply saying, will you come in, Jesus? That's the simplest prayer of all. Will you come in, Jesus? Will you allow him to transform you? And then will you seek to turn your life around and set off with him in that new direction? What better day to do that if you've never done that before than today at Easter Sunday? And all it needs is for you to say to Jesus, come in. And there'll be many of us here who actually have been Christians for some time and have heard this story time and time again. And I think that the message for us is this, that where are we in the story still now? Are we still inviting Jesus in, or have we shut him out from parts of our lives? Are there places where we need to turn around and allow him to walk with us and start going in the opposite direction again? Have we drifted away from him, and is he calling us back? Have we lost the joy of those first disciples who ran back to tell others he's risen? Do we need to pray today that actually God would encounter us afresh with the amazing news of this story? And to some of us too, I think what he's saying is actually, I want to invite you to join in with my restoration mission. I've created you for a purpose. Come and join in with bringing a little bit of that new heaven and earth to Malvern in 2019. I just invite you to respond to God however you want to right now. Jesus, meet us. We open our hearts. Come and transform us. Help us to turn around and follow your way. If someone can go and get the children back in, I just want to mention this, that if there are people here with questions who want to explore this a little bit more, then I would love to invite you to come to the Alpha course, which is going to be run by churches together in Malvern, not just us, which starts at Abbey Road Coffee Shop by the Priory on May the 13th. There are some invitations which look like this at the back, or chat to me afterwards, or Alice Wills is going to be involved, Peter Myers is going to be involved. But we'd love to invite you to come and explore. Go along to session one. If you don't like it, don't come back. But go along and see, and go and explore for yourself.